as he'd always been with Lucivar. But she'd noticed he'd become colder and more calculating when he escorted a woman to a social event, and more often than not, the woman didn't get as much as a goodnight kiss, let alone anything more intimate. At first, she'd worried that the coldness was her fault. After some internal debate, and with Marion's encouragement, she'd told Sadie why she'd been so pissed off with him about the bitch he'd bedded shortly before Titian was born. He'd accepted her explanation, even said he understood, but he began withdrawing from physical contact with everyone but the family. She had been available whenever he needed a companion for a social obligation, and that had kept the bitches who lusted for ambition away from him. Had her presence also kept away the women who lusted for him? Sadie hadn't had sex in 3 years. Well, neither had she. That wasn't the point. The point was, he'd begun building a wall between himself and everyone else since the day he knew his father was leaving them. And she was worried about what would happen to him if that wall became so thick that no one could reach him. But right now, there wasn't anything she could do. Damon was closed off with the warlord who was supposed to be their driver, and she didn't want to think about anything except her own aching heart and the man who had been a wonderful father to all of them. He had managed the Saw Diablo family's wealth and estates for close to a century. He had been the warlord prince of Demlin for almost as long, and he had explored a realm that few among the living had seen, and fewer still could survive. But until a few hours ago, he had still been a son, had still been the heir, had still had the illusion that he could hand all the duties and responsibilities back to the man who had shouldered them for a very, very long time. Now the illusion was gone, and it was time to officially shoulder two other titles: Patriarch of the Saw Diablo family, and High Lord of Hell. Damon escorted Cyril to the large sitting room in the family wing of the hall. He thought she'd been steady enough when they'd left the keep, but maybe he shouldn't have left her alone in the coach. Maybe she'd been pushing grief away as fiercely as he'd been. This sitting room had a lived-in shabbiness seen nowhere else in the hall, a kind of broken-in comfort. Only family and close friends were invited to this room. Bookshelves held the books of immediate interest. Cupboards held toys for Titian and games for Daemonar and Michael. And there were separate cupboards for the Sheltie's toys and Chewie's. There was a hodgepodge of sofas, chairs, lamps, and tables, and a round table that served as a game table, as well as a place to have a light meal. It was a private room that wasn't meant to be seen by any but the most trusted. "Beale is bringing up something to eat," Damon said, watching Cyril weave around the room, barely avoiding the furniture. The last time he'd seen her this way, the last time he'd spent time with her in this room, while she'd cried and sworn and ripped a chair to pieces before she'd fallen into an exhausted sleep, was the night after Rainier died and was taken to the keep to make the transition to Demon Dead.
"I'm not hungry."
Her voice was stripped of emotion.
"I'm not either, but we both should try to eat."
She moved as if she were drunk, but that lack of grace was caused by exhaustion and the grief finally breaking through her control.
"Do you remember the first time the High Lord kicked you out of his study?" Damon asked.
"He kicked you out, too," she grumbled as tears slid down her face.
"Because of you."
"It wasn't my fault Kalis helped Grazefang get past the shields I'd put around my bedroom."
"You didn't see Satan's face when you said you'd rather have a wolf in your bed than a man, because a wolf could lick his own balls."
She laughed a little and wiped at the tears, but they kept flowing. "He let me be family. I wasn't, not by birth or blood, but he didn't care about that.
He treated me like family, hugging and scolding and... The effort to hold back a sob seemed to break her completely.
Surreal.
Damon gathered her up and held her close. Not a child who needed protection. Not anymore. If he'd protected her at times in her life, she had also protected him and Janelle. They had circled around it for a lot of years, but he recognized that he and Surreal had developed a partnership committed to Janelle.
"That stupid bastard," Surreal cried. "I want to kick his ass for dying on us."
"So do I," he said, holding her tighter as his eyes filled with tears. "So do I." But it was time for him to go.
"That's not the point."
That little bit of snarl helped her regain some emotional balance. When she eased back, he let her go, and felt strangely hollow.
"Surreal."
She scooted around him, heading for the bathroom adjoining the sitting room.
"I'm going to wash my face. If Beale hears me sniffling, he'll have 10 healers up here trying to listen to my chest. My lungs healed decades ago, but if I so much as sneeze, he's there with sweaters and blankets. And Helton is even worse about..."
Whatever else she said was lost when she closed the bathroom door. Calling in a handkerchief, Damon wiped his own face and was sufficiently tidy when Beale brought in the tray.
"It's done?" Beale asked. "Yes, it's done. Satan is a whisper in the darkness." "Then please accept our condolences."
"Thank you, Beale.
And please tell Mrs. Beale that I appreciate her preparing something for Lady Surreal and me so late in the evening."
"I'll tell her. Holt is staying with your mother and Michael tonight. Lady Tirsa has been... distracted today. And since there is no journey maid staying with her at the moment, we thought it best if someone was at the cottage."
"I agree. I should have thought of it myself when Tirsa decided not to come with us."
Damon glanced at the clock on the mantel. "There's no point disturbing them tonight. I'll talk to Tirsa and Michael tomorrow. And Manny." He'd have to walk carefully around his chat with Manny. She'd been feeling her years lately, and had begun fussing about what would happen to the blood who had become demon dead when Satan no longer ruled hell.
"Do you agree?"
If Beale was surprised to be asked the question, he didn't show it.
"Yes,
Prince, I agree."
"High Lord."
The title hung in the air between them, proving that Beale had been aware of a great many things these past years and had kept his own counsel.
"For now, it will remain Prince Audi," Damon said, then added silently,
"at least in public and in this realm."
"Understood."
Surreal emerged from the bathroom a moment after Beale left the sitting room, making Damon suspect that she'd waited in order to avoid the butler.
"Any better?"
he asked gently. She shook her head.
"Sadi, could I stay here with you tonight?"
He'd been reaching for one of the covers on the dishes. He stopped and looked at her.
"Of course you can stay. Your suite is always ready for you."
She swallowed hard.
"No. Could I stay with you tonight?"
He stared at her, sure he'd misunderstood.
"I don't want to be alone."
She let out a watery laugh as the tears started again.
"There are probably 100 people in this house, so it's not like being alone."
"Yes, it is," he thought.
He'd been surrounded by those people too, but he'd still felt painfully alone after Janelle died, and still felt alone most of the time, and still sometimes had the dream where he looked in a mirror and saw the hole in his chest where his heart had been.
"Surreal."
He put his arms around her, wanting to give her some measure of the comfort she was seeking, and found some comfort when she wrapped her arms around him.
"My father is dead." the two people who had truly understood him in ways no one else ever could, were gone. He brushed his lips over her temple and felt something inside him stir. It had been so long since he'd held someone, and even longer since he'd dared hold someone when he was feeling vulnerable. His lips traveled down her cheek, and he tasted tears. When he started to pull back, she kissed his jaw, then his mouth, a soft kiss, asking for nothing but contact. Then her mouth warmed, moved, asked for more. And he gave her more, because it felt so good to hold someone again. With each brush of their bodies, something in him stirred, wanted, needed, yearned. But he started to pull away because she'd asked for comfort and not...
Damon.
Cyril took his face in her hands.
Freely given, freely taken. Just for tonight. So neither of us will be alone tonight. All right?
She wasn't a child, and the dream he'd waited for had come and gone.
My father is dead.
He allowed himself a moment to consider nothing except what he needed tonight. Come with me. Clasping her hand, he led her out of the sitting room, not sure where he was going, not caring where he was going, as long as they ended up in a room with a bed. Except when he reached the first available room, he hesitated and then bared his teeth in a snarl before he moved on, searching for something because now it was more than a desire for comfort and sex driving him, and that something was tangled around this particular woman. By the time he found the room that felt right, he didn't know where he was in the hall and he didn't care. It had a bed and it had her. Heat pulsed in his veins, but it burned in her too because she tore at his shirt in order to touch skin, and her purr of satisfaction as she ran her hands over his chest and shoulders tripped something inside him. A moment before, he'd been pulling at her clothes too. Now he became savagely gentle, letting her strip him down before he used craft to cuff her hands behind her back.
Sadi,
she snarled. Using craft, he pulled back the covers and plumped up the pillows.
Want me?
He purred. Aroused past prudence, she tried to bite him. He laughed, but he said,
Do that again, and the only thing you'll get is a cold shower.
She swore at him, but let him coax her into bed. Then she swore some more while he played with her, stroking, petting, kissing, and licking, until she was too caught up in sensation to form words. He gave her small climaxes that eased the need without eliminating the need, and enjoyed the slow emergence of her skin as he removed her clothing piece by piece. Finally, he released her hands and slid into her, relishing each moan and plea for more. So he gave her more, and then, when he couldn't hold back his own need for release, he gave her everything. Cyril drifted up to awareness. For the first time in weeks, maybe longer, she felt relaxed, easy. There was some soreness, but that was to be expected since she hadn't had a man inside her for 3 years. She suspected she would find a few bruises from the times when Saadi had edged into rough play, but nothing she hadn't asked for, and he probably had a few bruises of his own from her hands and teeth. She hoped he wasn't going to get pissy when he saw them. She wanted to float a while longer, keeping her thoughts confined to the delicious feel of the bed and Damon's hand resting on her belly, warm and heavy. But when she opened her eyes, her vision had been so tear-blurred last night, and Saadi had taken them through so many corridors to find a discreet bedroom, she hadn't known where they ended up. And last night, the room hadn't mattered, as long as it had a bed or sofa. Hell's fire. Last night, she wouldn't have cared if they ended up on the floor. But now... His psychic scent was much too prominent for this to be a seldom-used bedroom. Maybe this was the bedroom he used when a woman stayed overnight for sex? The thought cut, but she'd asked for something they both needed last night, and she'd told him it was freely given. So she couldn't quibble now if he hadn't seen it differently from the other sex he'd had since he'd been anyone's lover. Even if those other women hadn't recognized the difference, she'd lived around him long enough to know that Damon as a sex partner, even when he was giving great sex, paled in comparison with Damon as a lover. That thought added a wash of sadness over her contentment. Better to slip out now and go back to her suite to clean up and maybe get another hour of sleep. She would meet him at the breakfast table as if they'd parted company in the family sitting room and spent the night in their own beds. She started to shift, to slide out from under his hand, except the fingers suddenly pressed down on her belly and the nails pricked in warning. "Going somewhere?" Damon crooned as he rose up on one elbow and looked down at her. It was still too dark to see his face, his eyes, but that particular timbre in the deep voice had her heart racing. She knew the sadist's voice when she heard it. His hand didn't actually press down on her belly, but it felt heavier, more possessive. Then he turned back the covers for her at the same time a light appeared through the half-closed door on the opposite side of the room. Enough light to see the room, and to see his eyes. Not quite the sadist, but not Damon either. He was riding a side of his nature that was somewhere between the two. She slipped out of bed and walked into the bathroom, too aware that a predator watched her and was considering if she too was a predator and required careful handling or if she was prey. She used the toilet, then let water run in the sink to wash her face and stall for time. They weren't in a guest room. She'd seen enough to realize the room was too personal to be any kind of guest room. His bedroom, then. The consort's suite, since he hadn't moved out of the room next to Janelle's. A swift, careful probe confirmed he'd put black shields in the walls and black locks on the doors. No way for her to get out of this room until he let her go. Mother Night. A warlord prince's bedroom is his private place, and he tends to be more possessive when he's there. So if you're invited into his bedroom, you want to be more careful in how you deal with him. At the time, Cyril had thought Janelle's mind had begun wandering because of old age, especially because those kinds of comments had usually come when they were alone and working on some chore not even remotely related to the subject matter, which was why all those comments had stuck in her mind. "Hell's fire," Cyril whispered as she dried her face. Janelle's mind hadn't wandered. She'd been giving lessons in a way that wouldn't be resisted and wouldn't be forgotten. Damned if he understood why they had ended up here, except that he'd needed to have her in this room, in this bed. "You're only 1,800 years old, Damon. You're not going to spend the rest of your life celibate."
"You don't think I can?"
he'd crooned. "I know you can. That's why I want you to promise me that you won't. No one will think you're being unfaithful if you find another lover after the year of mourning. You're not going to spend the rest of your life without that kind of companionship or comfort. If you're not comfortable accepting that as a request from your wife, consider it a command from your queen." Cornered, he hadn't liked making that promise, and he hadn't liked the sex much. Even when he'd enjoyed it physically, he hadn't liked it much because of the expectations that always seemed to shroud the bed, and because he usually dreamed about Hecate and Dorothea afterward. He didn't need more of a reminder than that of what could happen if a man got careless and had sex with a woman who rode a cock in order to ride ambition. Besides, something had been missing from the bed with the women he'd pleasured that had made even the best sex a disappointment for him. That elusive something wasn't missing last night, though. The water in the bathroom shut off, and his attention sharpened. He'd have to think about why last night was different. Later. Damon hadn't moved at all during her time in the bathroom.
"It's early," he crooned. "Come back to bed."
Not a lot of choices. She slipped into bed, not sure what to expect. Arousal was dominant in his psychic scent, so she wouldn't have been surprised if he'd rolled on top of her. After all, he was the dominant male in Kalir, and that much power had privileges no other male could claim. Instead, he pulled the covers up high enough to cover her breasts. Then his fingers lightly stroked her hair, combing it away from her face.
"How are you?"
he asked, his voice still in that dangerous croon.
"All right."
"Sore?"
"A little."
She didn't dare so much as tweak the truth. Not with him. Not now. His fingers drifted to her temple, down her jaw, over her neck and shoulders. So light. So delicate. Her heart stopped racing as she relaxed under that delicate touch. When he eased the covers down to her hips, she didn't protest, barely noticed because those fingers kept drifting along her skin, making her float. A brush of thumb over hard nipple made her whimper, and whimper even louder because he stopped touching.
"Pain?"
he asked. Then his mouth closed over that nipple, and what he did with his tongue stopped just shy of pain.
"Stop?"
She curled her fingers in his hair to hold him in place.
"Not if you want to live."
It was meant as a growl, but came out a different kind of whimper. After he gave her breasts sufficient attention, he kissed her mouth, hot and full. Then he said,
"Do you want more, or do you want to leave?"
It took her a moment to realize she understood the words. He could sense her arousal, psychic and physical, but if she said she wanted to leave, he would release the lock on the door and let her go with no protest, no show of temper or disappointment. When a man belonged to the most dangerous caste of male, a display of temper in bed could be seen as coercion far too easily. It took her even less than a moment to realize he probably would never make this invitation again. And while she'd had some men who were good lovers, and a few who had been excellent in bed, she had never been with anyone who could make a woman feel like he did.
"I want more," she said.
He slid over her, slid into her as she opened for him. As the sun slowly brightened the room, he rode her delicately, lazily, and so thoroughly, he made her feel things she hadn't ever dreamed were possible. Chapter 6. 4 days after her night with Damon, Cyril caught the gray wind and headed for Amdar, intending to spend a few days at the family's townhouse. She had barely reached the town beyond Halloway when she felt a pain in her abdomen, a pain more severe than the worst moontime cramps she'd ever experienced, a pain so severe she almost tumbled from the gray web. Shaken, she dropped from the winds and waited for the pain to subside. Then she continued on to Amdar, riding the green winds. A day after that, just wearing her gray jewels caused her the same kind of pain as trying to use her gray power during her moon time, and even wearing her birthright green made her queasy. A day after that, she used craft without thinking and threw up on the sitting room rug, and became so weak and dizzy, Helton found her lying in her own vomit a few minutes later. Helton panicked, along with the rest of the townhouse's staff, and healers converged on the Saw Diablo residence, including Lady Zara's personal healer. She answered all their questions truthfully, except one. Despite her protests that it couldn't have happened, every single healer assured her that it had. So she stayed in bed resting for a day, putting up with Helton's fussing to make up for scaring the man so badly. For herself, she was excited, and she was scared. And she was terrified of what would happen when she told Saadi. Chapter 7. Surreal walked into the hall early the next morning and gave Beale a bright smile.
Good morning, Beale.
The flash of alarm on Beale's face before he regained control confirmed that her mirror hadn't lied. She looked as washed out and sickly as she felt, and she was becoming more fragile with every hour that passed. That was why she had to act before she lost the reason to act.
I need to see Saadi, she said, tipping her head toward the study door at the back of the great hall. Is he there?
Yes, Beale hesitated. Should I send for the village healer? Or your personal healer in Amdar?
Saw my healer yesterday. Today, I need to talk to Saadi.
Now it was her turn to hesitate, but she had to consider the tempers she would be dealing with today.
Prince Yaslana is supposed to see me this morning. I left a message at my house that I would be here. You know how early he can arrive, and I didn't want him getting snarly if he didn't find me at home, so...
I'll be certain to let him know your whereabouts the moment he arrives, Beale said.
Maybe he meant to sound reassuring, but as she walked to Saadi's study, she thought Beale's words sounded more like a threat. Damon didn't look up when she entered the room, but he said,
Good morning. Beale said you were here. I don't think there is anything today that requires my second-in-command's attention, but you can check with Holt if you like. Let me finish this up, and then I can join you for a quick meal in the breakfast.
He looked up at that moment. He dropped the pen back in its holder and pushed away from the desk.
I need to talk to you.
She hated feeling so fragile, and hated even more how much that fragility scared her, because all the healers had warned her that it would take so little right now to destroy the life beginning to grow inside her.
What's wrong?
He moved toward her with a speed that had her backing up against the door.
Are you ill? Have you seen a healer?
No, I'm not ill. Yes, I've seen a healer. Saadi, I'm...
Come over here and sit down. You're...
pregnant.
He jerked to a stop, then took a step back.
Not Damon anymore, she thought, as she watched his eyes change. May the darkness have mercy on me. Whatever he is right now is more and worse than the sadist.
Pregnant.
His voice was cold and viciously gentle. He took another step back and slipped his hands in his trousers pockets.
I don't expect anything from you, she said quickly. That's not why I'm here. I just wanted you to know that I won't deny that you are the baby's father. When it's time for the birthright ceremony, I won't deny paternity. You have my word, Saadi. I won't do that to you.
You're not leaving with my child,
he said too softly.
Well, it's a little small to be staying here without me, she snapped.
You're not leaving with my child, he said again.
Now he approached her, stalked her. She wasn't sure he was sane.
We'll be married a week from tomorrow, he said.
I didn't agree to marry you.
You're not leaving with my child.
Well, as sure as the sun doesn't shine in hell, you can't keep me locked away here.
He raised his right hand, The black jewel in the ring flashed as he unleashed some of its reservoir, and the hall shook as his power rolled through it. Black shields snapped into place within all the outside walls, and black locks on the doors and windows turned the Saw Diablo family home into a prison. He smiled at her.
"Sadi, don't,"
she whispered, shivering.
"What are the healers going to tell me when I ask, Lady Surreal?" he crooned. "You're already fragile and vulnerable. You can't use any of your jeweled strength while you're pregnant without destroying the child, which means you can't protect yourself or the child. Your jewels need to be drained on a regular basis for the next 10 months in order for the baby to grow healthy in the womb."
"Lucivar could drain the jewels?"
"Instead of the baby's father, I think not."
Damon moved closer. She couldn't back away from him because she was already pressed against the door.
"I didn't tell you about the pregnancy because I want something from you," she said.
He was too close. He wasn't touching her, but he was much too close.
"Your heart is pounding and your scent is filled with fear," he crooned. "That isn't good for you or the baby."
"Then back off."
But she didn't dare say that. "Your jewels need to be drained."
"Lucivar will be here soon."
"So you told him and not me?"
"No. I sent a message, said I needed to see him this morning, and it was urgent. But I didn't tell him why. Not before I told you. I didn't tell anyone who fathered this child, and I won't if you don't want anyone else to know."
He studied her. She wasn't sure he saw her as a person anymore. She wasn't sure of anything where he was concerned. She'd expected him to be upset or pissed or defensive. Right now, she was afraid he would kill her or just kill the baby.
"Maybe it wasn't smart to have sex that night," she said,
her words tumbling over one another in her haste to explain.
"I hadn't been drinking a contraceptive brew, but hell's fire. I haven't been with anyone in years, so why would I keep drinking the stuff? And it shouldn't have been my fertile time. Not that I thought about that, or anything else that night, but it shouldn't have been my fertile time."
"And yet you got pregnant."
"I didn't do it alone," she snapped. "And maybe you weren't thinking clearly that night either, but you were the one who initiated the other 3 times the following morning."
He said nothing for a long moment, just studied her. She couldn't tell if his eyes held affection or hate.
"If you don't want to marry me, that is your choice," Damon crooned. "I won't force you, although you should consider the advantages of being my wife. But regardless of what you decide, you'll stay here until the baby is born. After that, you can leave. The child, however, stays with me, under my roof, and under my protection. Is that clear?"
"I want to leave now."
She hated that her voice shook.
"No. Your suite is ready for you as always. Beal and Helene will retrieve your clothing and other personal items from your house."
"I can stay in my own house. It's just down the road."
"No."
She should have run to the keep. Should have asked Draka for sanctuary until she'd reached some kind of agreement with Sadi. No chance to do that now.
"I don't feel well,"
she whispered.
"I need to rest."
"My offer of marriage stands. Consider it."
He reached behind her and turned the door handle. As he pulled the door open, the movement nudged her against him. She turned to avoid feeling him pressed against her belly, but he still held the handle, and his left arm blocked her escape, so she felt the heat of him on her back and buttocks, and felt his breath on her cheek as he leaned into her.
"While you're considering whether you would enjoy being the wife of the Warlord Prince of Demlin, also consider if you could tolerate being the wife of the High Lord of Hell."
She half turned.
"I'm not going to be marrying Uncle—"
She saw it in his eyes, and now understood why he felt different, felt even more dangerous. The sadist was now the High Lord.
May the darkness have mercy on me. I'd like to go to my room now.
Think about my offer, he whispered. Then he stepped back and let her go. She bolted out of Damon's study. Beale was waiting for her in the great hall. At first, she was grateful to hook her arm in his for light support. But by the time they climbed the stairs and were walking toward her suite, she was clinging to him to stay on her feet, and Holt came at a run to support her on the other side. Helene met them at the suite and tucked her on the sofa when she got stubborn about being put to bed. After admitting that she had left the tonic the healer had made up for her at her house in the village, Jason dashed to Halloway to retrieve it. She didn't ask what else Saadi's valet intended to retrieve while he was there. She let them fuss over her because she needed some help. Mostly, she let them fuss as a way to keep all of them from thinking about the cold temper that waited for them behind the study door. Damon stood in his study, staring at nothing. The vision he had seen in a tangled web last night. A beautifully wrapped gift being offered to him by someone he trusted. He hadn't seen the woman, only the hands holding the gift. And today, a child. A baby. His. The wanting was suddenly brutally fierce. He wanted this baby with everything in him, and would do whatever it took to keep it. He hoped for her sake that Cyril understood that. He didn't want to hurt her, but if he had to choose between them, he wouldn't hesitate to destroy her in order to protect the child. There were times when the pain of missing Janelle almost crushed him. He wanted her back. Sweet darkness, how he wanted her back. Janelle wasn't coming back, but now there was a chance to give his heart to someone else without betraying the love of his life. He wasn't sure if the limited affection he could give a woman would be enough to keep a wife content, but he knew he could love the child. He hoped for all their sakes that Cyril understood that too. Lucivar hovered over the hall and swore softly. When he received Cyril's note last night, he'd known something was wrong, but based on her saying, "It's urgent, but don't come until tomorrow morning," he hadn't expected to arrive and find the hall locked down as if prepared for an attack. Black shields, black locks. The only partial access was the double front doors, which had a red lock. Probably because Beale would be the one granting access and could release and restore a red lock. He made a fast descent, then backwinged to land lightly on the gravel drive. The door opened before he reached it, and he was right. Beale was guarding the only potential way into the hall. "The prince is in his study, waiting to speak to you," Beale said.
"I'm here to see Cyril," Lucivar replied.
"She is resting."
"Resting? At this hour? Is she ill?"
"The prince will explain." He didn't like the sound of that. He liked it even less when he walked into Damon's study and found his brother standing in the middle of the room, watching him with glazed, sleepy eyes.
"Is Cyril ill?"
Lucivar asked, shoving the door closed.
"She's pregnant,"
Damon replied softly. He rocked back on his heels. There hadn't been a man in Cyril's life in quite some time, so her unexpected pregnancy explained Damon locking down the hall against outsiders. And it explained why Cyril was here and not at her own house. It also explained the chill in Damon's temper and those glazed eyes. Lucivar settled into a fighting stance, his wings half spread for balance, an instinctive response.
"Am I here to help her drain her jewels, or to help you have a chat with the cock who danced with her?"
"I am the cock who danced with her,"
Damon crooned. His lungs locked, and for a moment he couldn't breathe.
"You?"
Damon smiled,
Lucivar shuddered.
I'd like to talk to Cyril.
You don't need my permission.
Today I do.
Damon's smile became more gentle and more terrifying.
Yes, today you do.
Would I have walked out of this room intact if I hadn't known that?
He didn't need to ask the question when he already knew the answer. The study door opened, Damon's invitation for him to leave. Turning his back on the sadist was playing with suicide, but he did it. When he reached the door, Damon said,
Lucivar, I want this baby.
Lucivar looked over his shoulder.
I'll talk to Cyril, and then you and I will talk.
He walked out of the study. Beale stood in the great hall at the doorway leading to the informal receiving room and the staircase that led to the family wing.
Anything I need to know?
He asked the butler.
Lady Cyril saw her healer in Amdar and was given a tonic to help her body adjust to...
Beale fumbled, clearly reluctant to speak of something so personal when it pertained to the Sa Diablo family. Especially when none of them knew if Damon would take offense at someone talking about Cyril. Lucivar nodded so that Beale didn't have to continue.
I'm going up now to talk to her.
With the prince's permission.
I don't believe Lady Cyril's jewels have been drained yet, Beale said.
Not something I can do for her now,
Lucivar thought as he strode through the corridors that led to Cyril's suite. Blood was the living river, and the body was the vessel for the power that made the blood who and what they were. But everything had a price. When a witch wore darker jewels, her moon times were more uncomfortable. And the pain of doing more than basic craft during the first 3 days was fierce. That was the reason they drained their jewels before a moon time, to let the body rest. And when they were pregnant, they submitted to someone else draining the reserve power in their jewels so that their power didn't try to fill the child in the womb and destroy it. He rapped once on Cyril's sitting room door and went in before she answered. One look at her had him yanking back his temper because she didn't need a man yelling at her, but he couldn't stop himself from going up to the windows where she stood and opening his wings halfway to look more intimidating.
Get off your feet, he snarled.
Take a piss in the wind, she snarled back.
Relieved that she didn't sound as sick as she looked, he took a step back to give her some room.
Aren't you going to ask how this happened? Cyril said.
I have two children. I know how it happened. What I don't know is what you want to do about it.
Do about it? I'm keeping it. How could you think I would...
She burst into tears.
Ah, Cyril.
He put his arms around her and cuddled her while she cried.
That isn't what I meant.
I'm not upset, she said, still crying. My body is doing strange things, and it's making me weepy. And being weepy because I can't help it is not the same as being upset.
Lucivar rubbed his cheek against her hair.
It will be all right. In a couple of days you'll swing over to Bitchy, and that will feel more normal to you.
She punched him. He laughed. When she seemed settled again, he called in a handkerchief and let her mop her face.
What I meant was, what do you want to do about Saadi? Talk to me, Cyril.
I'd rather you talk to him.
After you tell me what you want. I thought Damon had this place locked down to keep everyone out. But that's not all of it, is it?
He says I can't leave with his child.
Well, the baby can't go anywhere without you for quite some time, and he can't seriously expect you to stay inside the hall for the next 10 months.
I wouldn't bet on that, sugar.
Cyril sniffled once more, then vanished the handkerchief.
He offered to marry me. Told me more like it. A week from tomorrow.
He loved his brother, but he wasn't sure Damon was emotionally ready to be anyone's husband yet, if ever.
What did you say?
I haven't given him an answer yet. She looked sad and wistful. But I am going to marry him.
Why?
When she didn't answer, he swore softly.
I know you care for Damon, and he cares for you, but I'm not sure he can give you the kind of love a wife deserves from a husband.
I do have some conditions that he'll have to agree to, and if he agrees, I think we can do well enough together.
You don't have to settle for well enough.
She turned away to stare out the window.
I want this baby, Lucivar. Not just a baby, this baby. And I want this chance at a marriage. I haven't shared my life with anyone since Rainier, and we were never lovers, never had that kind of bond. Plenty of men since then have been willing to entertain a short-term liaison, especially if it got them an invitation to sit at a dinner table with Damon and talk about whatever grand idea they had that needed a little financial backing. But men from the short-lived races didn't want to have children who wouldn't reach true adulthood in their lifetime. And men from the long-lived races saw their offspring's lives cut short if I was the mother. I never fit into either place. Saadi knows all that, but he wants this child too, regardless of whatever lifespan it may have. And I have the feeling that if he doesn't have someone soon who can make a claim on his heart, he'll become so cold and distant, we'll all lose him. Or he'll become so lonely, he'll accept the illusion of love and end up like his father, with a woman who loves ambition more than him. Well, I do love him, and I know he probably will never love me. But I can keep him from being alone, and I can give him a family of his own.
And what will you get? Lucivar asked.
I'll get a family too.
Is that enough?
I'll find out.
Then I guess I should talk to him about the wedding.
I need to talk to him first. Could you stay around for a little while?
All right.
Lucivar, did you know Saadi is the High Lord now?
Her words froze Lucivar's heart. He'd suspected that Damon had begun absorbing that side of Satan's duties years ago. Saadi was, after all, Satan's true heir. But he hadn't wanted to see the evidence, hadn't wanted to acknowledge what had been unspoken until now. He'd been afraid that once he admitted that Damon was the High Lord, he would lose the man who was his brother. He understood Cyril's decision now. The realms couldn't afford to let Damon slide into an isolated, lonely existence. None of them wanted to see Damon repeat the mistakes in Satan's life, or see the rise of someone like Hecata because of those mistakes. The new High Lord of Hell needed to be kept tethered to the living, because the simple truth was, he was more dangerous than his predecessor.
"Go on and talk to him," Lucivar said. "Get things settled between you."
He paused.
"And then get off your feet."
He thought her answer landed squarely on the side of bitchy, which pleased him because it meant she was feeling a little better. And he'd take bitchy over tears any day. Cyril found Damon standing in the middle of his study, watching her with those glazed gold eyes.
"I have some conditions," she said. "If you can agree to them, I'll marry you."
"I'm listening," he crooned.
Her throat closed up. She was dancing on the knife's edge by making any demands of him. But now was the only time such things could be said, if she could get her voice working again. He moved toward her slowly. He probably thought his movements weren't threatening. Unfortunately, until things were settled between them, there was nothing about him that wasn't threatening.
"Let me tell you what I think are some of your concerns," he said as he stepped close enough to touch her. "The wife of the warlord Prince of Demlin has to make a commitment to be faithful to her husband and take no lovers. Naturally, she would want the same commitment from her husband."
"Yes."
Yes, Surreal whispered, staring at the black jewel peeking through the unbuttoned opening of his white silk shirt.
But I don't think you want to be married and celibate, Damon continued, his voice becoming a soothing caress. And I think you enjoyed the pleasure I gave you in bed. Yes?
Yes, she whispered.
So one of your conditions is that I be a husband to my wife in every way? That I don't deny you the pleasure and comfort of sex? She nodded, still not daring to look into his eyes.
I was aware of that when I made the offer, Surreal, he said gently. I can't promise you a husband's love, because I don't know if I have that in me anymore. But I can promise you all the social courtesies, all of the physical courtesies, that much I can and will give you.
He lifted her chin with one finger, a silent command to look at him.
Is there anything else?
No. Yes. I don't want to be locked up here for the next 10 months.
If I agree to that, you in turn will try to tolerate occasional bouts of rabid protectiveness?
She heard amusement in his voice and felt the slightest release of tension in his body.
If you turn rabid, I'll turn bitchy.
He smiled. Fair enough. One question. Is there a particular stone you would like for your wedding ring? Or a particular kind of setting? She shook her head.
Surprise me.
In that case, lady.
His lips touched hers, a soft kiss that remained soft but grew warmer. She floated on the sensation of being wrapped in the softest blanket. So soft, so deliciously warm. She felt light and heavy, and there was nothing in the world but his mouth so soft on hers and his hands lightly brushing her back under her shirt. She wanted to snuggle down into that soft warmth and doze for hours, safe and content. She didn't know how much time had passed before Damon raised his head and said,
"Feel better?"
Her head began to clear, but the warm, sleepy feeling remained, and the sharp discomfort in her abdomen was gone.
"You drained my power," she said. "Gray and green."
"Yes."
He kissed her temple.
"You going to kiss me like that every time you drain me?"
She felt him smile. "I'm going to kiss you like that, simply to kiss you like that. And I'll do it often, if it pleases you."
Mother Night.
She felt the pull of desire between her legs, but the soft warmth wrapped around her again, and she didn't want to do anything about that pull. Not right now.
"Once I drain your jewels to give you an unfilled reservoir, your body will channel its power to them naturally, the same as it does during your moon time," Damon said. "I thought you would be more comfortable if I took a direct path this first time."
She was pretty sure he'd wrapped some spells around her while kissing her, but she felt too comfortable and lazy and soft to care.
"Why don't you snuggle down on the sofa in here and take a nap?" he said.
She nodded. She'd do anything to keep that voice stroking over her, petting her.
And maybe tomorrow, or next month, she'd figure out why feeling that way should piss her off.
For now, she let him settle her on the leather sofa in his study and tuck a light blanket around her.
"Rest, Surreal,"
he said quietly as he ran a hand over her hair.
"Rest," he'd said. So she obeyed.
Chapter 8. Happy to have a few minutes when she wasn't required to smile at women she wanted to knife, Surreal sat alone at a table near the ballroom windows, watching her husband partner one of the province queens in a dance. Saadi hadn't insulted anyone's intelligence by pretending, or implying, that the reason the marriage had been planned with such speed was that he had suddenly fallen in love with his second in command. Besides, no one, male or female, who had participated in a pregnancy, and saw the way Saadi and Yaslana responded whenever anyone came near her, had any doubts about why Damon was getting married again.
Some of the province queens who attended the brief ceremony and were now staying for the afternoon-long reception resented Cyril for standing between them and Saadi all those years, certain she'd done it so that she would be in position to snag the coveted title of lover, or the more lucrative title of wife, at a time when Saadi might be emotionally vulnerable.
Like, for example, the day his father finally became a whisper in the darkness. Other ladies were noticeably relieved that Damon had remarried and had chosen someone whose temper and ambitions weren't likely to give anyone unpleasant surprises. A few were genuinely happy for her. All the queen's consorts were hearty in their congratulations, since her new title of wife meant their ladies would no longer dare look in Saadi's direction, which meant their own positions in the courts were secure, at least for the duration of their contracts. But whether they resented her, were relieved for themselves, or were happy that the warlord prince of Demlin had a steady sexual companion, they had all been careful of how they approached her. Not because they felt threatened by her, Cyril thought with a dollop of resentment, but because the consequences of pissing off Damon or Lucivar right now were bound to be painful and messy.
Am I interrupting?
Cyril smiled at Lady Zara.
Not at all. Please join me.
She and the Queen of Amdar had had their share of disagreements over the years, but despite that, they had become friendly and worked well together. Zara set a plate on the table.
I thought you might be feeling up to a little nibble now that the ceremony is over and your nerves have settled. When I was pregnant with my first child, I found that a bite or two every couple of hours was easier to handle than a meal, especially in the early stages.
She studied Cyril.
But if seeing or smelling food makes you queasy, I'll remove the plate right now. Is that why you're sitting so far away from the feast?
Cyril selected a triangle of toast that held a bit of chopped beef.
I wasn't sitting away from the food. I was sitting close to the windows in fresh air. And actually, I could use a bit of food now.
Breakfast didn't stay down this morning. Zara made a sympathetic face.
It will get better.
She selected a slice of fruit from the plate and tipped her head toward the center of the room.
I'm surprised Prince Saadi isn't dancing attendance on you instead of dancing with the guests, especially since you weren't feeling well this morning.
Snarling, Cyril selected a cube of cheese.
After the wedding ceremony and well-wishing were completed, I went to the bathroom to pee, just to pee. And he followed me inside the room and intended to stay so that I wouldn't, I don't know, fall over in a faint and crack my skull or some other such nonsense. After I tried to punch him, I told him if he didn't stop fussing and give me some breathing room, he would have the distinction of being married and divorced on the same day, which is why he's currently over there and I'm over here.
Zara swallowed hard. Cyril couldn't tell if the woman was appalled or amused.
Mother Night, Zara finally said. But he did respect your wishes.
You think so?
The bastard sicked the Shelties on me.
He did not sick us. The duet of voices came from under the table. We volunteered. Zara pressed her lips together and stared at the ceiling. Her shoulders shook. Cyril pondered the plate of food. That flash of temper seemed to clear up the last of the morning wobbles, so she began eating with more enthusiasm. Holt wandered by, set two wine glasses on the table, and wandered off. Zara picked up a glass and sniffed.
I'm guessing this one has water.
She set that one in front of Cyril, then took a sip from the other glass and nodded her approval.
Your ring is lovely. The design looks like something Bernard would do.
but I have never seen a stone like that. It's called Earth's Moonlight, Cyril said, holding out her hand so that Zara could get a better look.